Many years ago, I had the privilege of seeing Raúl Rodríguez do a photo shoot at my local site. The acro moves he performed were breathtaking. I've never seen anybody with more glider control skills. And while I don't have the courage or commitment to do acro, I have the utmost respect for those who give the time and energy to mastering the highest level of control of their wing. When I was planning this podcast, somebody asked me what I was going to do my next one on. When I said acro, the response was, "Oh, it's about the nutters." I have to say that I found that pretty insulting, even for a huge wimp like me. There's a big misconception about the effort and commitment involved. Unsurprisingly, all my guests for this podcast mentioned this attitude. I hope in this podcast we can dispel some of these misconceptions. In this episode, I speak to three British acro pilots who've set up the British Acrobatics Paragliding Academy to promote the discipline and to help pilots to progress in an organised and safe way. Opportunities for practising are not easy in the UK. The climate and terrain make for unfavourable conditions, and traditionally there has been a dearth of schools and organisations to assist pilots in this discipline. Lee Trihorn, who teaches SIV and acro, Alex Colbeck and Jack Pimblett, who are accomplished acro XC and competition pilots, tell me about the challenge they face, the work it takes to get to their level, and what the BAPA can do to get British acro to the highest level. And if you think acro is a standalone skill, think again. If you're good at acro, you'll be safer in any situation, because you can get your wing back into its happy place, or have the skills to know when it's not recoverable. You'll also be aware of the equipment you need to get you back safely down to the ground. Here are the guys to introduce themselves.
My name's Alex Colbeck. I've been flying for about 11 years. I started in the Air Cadets and they said, "Oh, we've got a course coming up for paragliding." Or I think it was hang gliding, actually. "Do you want to go on it?" And I said yes, not really knowing what it was. Ended up going to South Wales and learning to paraglide there. And I've never really looked back since. I've been flying cross-country mainly over the past few years, flying in the British Championships and a few competitions like that. In the last few years, probably two seasons, maybe three seasons of flying, I've been concentrating on flying acro as a new challenge and something to learn. Acro is something that I've always followed, so I know who all the top pilots are and what the tricks are and things like that, but I've never attempted to get into it until the last sort of 3 years. With the advent of base harnesses and wings to progress on that are kind of more suitable for less experienced pilots. And in the last 2 years, I've been part of the British Acrobatic Paragliding Academy, and we've been working on lots of different projects.
My name's Jack Pimblett. I'm a paragliding pilot from the UK, and I've been flying now for around about 4 years. I started when I was around about 3 years old with my dad doing tandem flying. Then as I went tandem with him more, I just became obsessed with the sport. It started from tandeming, went to dual controls on the tandem. I started ground handling at around 7 years old, picked up a paraglider at around about 11 years old and did my first bunny hops. And then one day when I was getting a bit frustrated with my dad and he wasn't letting me progress, I was just on paragliding forum and I ordered my own paraglider that was big enough to allow me to fly by myself and do my first soaring flights without telling him. And that arrived in the post to his shock, and he was kind of forced into teaching me how to fly properly then. From then on, I just kind of flew as much as I could. And now I'm doing it almost full time. I study HNC in electronics in Liverpool. And besides that, I'm living for the sport, really. In my off season, I'm in the gym every day and developing more of the business side of things. And then I'm from about April until October, I'm flying almost every day, really, whether that's competitions for acro, cross country, or just training.
My name is Lee Trihorn. I've been flying for the past 12 years now. I enjoy all aspects of paragliding, but my focus right from the start has always been on acro paragliding. It's the bit that really excited me, the bit that I really enjoy. So in any spare time that I get, mainly the focus of what I do in terms of my own flying is flying acro. I worked for a couple of major UK schools for 7 or 8 years. And then I was in a very fortunate position where I could start up my own school. So we do a lot of guiding, but we also run SIV courses. And I now run introductory to acro courses. SIV and acro is my real passion in the sport. So we've been lucky enough to turn that into a business and turn our hobby into our life.
What made you first start to become so passionate about acro?
Even before I knew paragliding existed, I've always been slightly that way inclined. I've always enjoyed funfair rides. I used to be in sailplane gliding. I enjoyed the cross-country element, but I enjoyed more taking them up and spinning them around and doing beat-ups of the runway. And it's always been that kind of thing with whatever sport I've done. I used to be into BMXing and skateboarding. And it was always about learning tricks, mastering tricks. And so it's always been something that's been in the back of my personality. And paragliding came around and just kind of ticked all the boxes. It was just the kind of thing I'd been searching for, I guess. So it's always been there since I was a wee lad.
So how'd you get into it? Here's Jack.
The way I see it is I don't like to use the term acro, really. I like to use, for example, advanced SIV. I feel that the everyday pilots or the weekend pilots kind of look at us acro pilots and they think, God, they're crazy, or they're a little bit twisted, or this, that, and the other. However, I'd prefer to kind of more angle it at advanced glider control or something that is just really a natural progression from your everyday flying. And so I just started doing my normal flights, and then my dad would say to me, do you want to learn wingovers? And he'd get me on the radio, and I'd learn wingovers at my home site, Parlock, in the north of England. And it all just started from there, and I just went really, really slowly. So for my 16th birthday, my present was to go to Lake Garda and go on an SIV course with the Nova team, who I was with back in the day. And from there, I was just obsessed. I did my first stalls, and I remember going to the SIV instructor, who unfortunately didn't speak a word of English. And I got there, and I was sat at the desk with everyone, and we were going through SIV lecture. And it was in German, or Austro-German, for the entirety of 2 hours or whatever it was. And I'm sat there patiently, waited until there was going to be an English explanation. And then I see everyone putting life jackets on and getting their radios ready. And I'm like, oh, God, this isn't good. So I just nudge my friend and go, there is going to be an English explanation, right? They're not exactly, they don't seem to be aware of the fact that I speak only English. So at that point, there is some sort of a little bit of a mingling in the background, and they were talking and they didn't know what to do. And I just got my friend to explain to the SIV instructor that I didn't want to learn collapses, because by that point I was already flying a lot anyway during the summer, and I'd kind of experienced collapses in real life situations. And I just wanted to learn stalls. I learned one word in German, which was Bremsen. He learned one word in English, which was rescue. So that was the kind of process of me learning my first stalls, really. I would go out into the box over Lake Garda, and he would say Bremsen until the glider stalled. I controlled it. I exited, and if he didn't say rescue, it was a good stall. So over the period of 5 days I was there, I just continually smashed out stalls and did about 60 or 70. And it just became an obsession of mine. It wasn't ever supposed to be, oh, I want to learn infinity tumbling, or I want to be the best in the world, or I want to be this, I want to be that. For me, it just became of the next best thing. And it's kind of something that I've come to realize in myself, that I have this kind of higher order thinking, it's called, where something that I have in the moment isn't quite good enough. So it lends itself to being quite obsessive with the way I've gone at my training, and the level I'm flying at now needs to be improved or needs to be developed, or I can improve it in some way. And that's the way it was back then as well. So I started with my stalls, and then the next best thing was to learn helicopter, and then the next best thing was to learn helicopter combinations, and it was really just it just spiraled out of control from there, really.
And you wonder why people think you're mad when you say it spirals out of control, but I'm sure no pun intended.
No pun intended at all.
Lee also mentions the attitude some other pilots have to acro.
I remember in the early days we did a few balloon jumps and things and people go, oh, crazy Lee, oh, Lee, you're crazy. And actually, you know, we're training hard. We're trying to put as much time into it as we can. We're trying to make it as safe and as sensible as we can. And that's the point, you know, people just don't see the time away that you are, you know, the kind of sacrifices you make from your normal life to be able to dedicate that kind of time to do it. And it is, you know, there's still a big perception in Europe, not so much in Spain and France. The general paragliding communities there are really supportive of their acro guys. But I find still in the UK, the acro scene is a long way behind the cross-country scene, the accuracy scene. There's still a large opinion, I think, that we are nutters, that we're crazy, that, oof, those boys, oh, you know, they're going to come a cropper one day, and oof. And it's the kind of uphill battle that we're trying to fight at the moment.
Living in Spain, I really do notice the difference, considering we've got the Rodriguez brothers and, yeah, you know, Horacio Lorenz and stuff. Yeah, they are massively embraced, and the community is so proud of the local boys, you know, and yeah, that they've trailblazed and invented so many manoeuvres. Because obviously Raul Rodriguez was one of the founders of Niviuk, so I've seen him around our neck of the woods. And, you know, he comes and I've seen him do acro for photo shoots when there's nobody else around. And the control, I mean, it's just, I mean, so, my heart's in my mouth, but the awe that he inspires, yeah, is, yeah, just incredible. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe him as a nutter, you know, because everybody's just in awe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as acro pilots, we're actually, ironically, probably the safest pilots, because we have that element of glider control that a lot of pilots don't have. Mm. You know, and in cross-country situations, what, you know, very big turbulent air, there's no pilot that's safer than an acro pilot, because they have the fundamental wing control in any situation.
But, I mean, you can see that in the results. You know, Seiko was an acro pilot. Isabella Messenger was an acro pilot. Felix Rodriguez, you know, has done, yeah, really well in the PWCs and things. And
Packets as well.
Yeah. I mean, the confidence it must give you that if you're banging down a course in a race, if, yeah, it goes to shit, you can sort it out. And absolutely, there's probably a lot of other people in that are really good at cross-country flying, but that haven't got the glider control skills that an acro pilot, yeah, have. And the confidence that must give you must be enormous.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had the courage. For me, big ears is a pretty, you know, pretty radical manoeuvre. You know, I have to admit that I am a complete wimp when it comes to folding my glider up. I have huge admiration for people who put the time into to become such masters at the sport. And I mean that, you know, the sport of paragliding generally, because if you've got that, yeah, good glider control skill, like you say, you can apply that to all the other disciplines. And absolutely, you're at the top of your game if you're at the top of your game in glider control.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So how much work does it take to master acro?
When you say you have to put in a lot of training, yeah, I mean, how much training are we talking about to get to the level that you're at the moment?
To get to the level I'm at in the time I've done it, so I've been flying 4 years, but I've been training consistently now 2 years. We're talking 300-400 hours a year, maybe 800 hours in the last 2 years. That's predominantly acro. I flew around about 150 hours to 200 hours of cross country this year, and then another maybe 200 or 300 on top of that for acro. And during the summer months in Organia, which for those that don't know is a small town in the north of Spain near Andorra, where we have this amazing site that for 3, 4, 5 months of the year sometimes, there's just this beautiful southerly flow that goes into a valley and hits this huge mountain where the air has no choice but to go up. And we're able to play in this thermodynamic lift for 10 hours a day at times. And so during the summer, when I'm usually there, end of June, July and August, we're getting up pretty late, but we're getting up and then heading to the mountain for about 12, and then we don't finish until after dark. So depending on how well prepared you are for it, you can train up to 10 hours a day for 60 days, sometimes during a season. I remember my first season there, I arrived on 2nd of July, and I didn't have a day off flying until August 8th. So it really shows how intensive and how much you have to train. But what I want to also say is that it's not, I don't want it to be an elitist thing, because ACRO really shouldn't be about that. It's definitely accessible for your weekend pilots or people that are able to, perhaps not in England, but in places like Austria, go to their cable car every weekend or whatever. And, you know, you can actually pursue ACRO in a non-obsessive and give up your life for it kind of way, you know.
Here's Alex on why he got into it.
Personally, I got into ACRO because I wanted a new challenge. I wanted to learn something new. I saw the kind of improvements in the safety equipment, like the cutaway harness. It was to kind of learn and challenge myself. And the result of flying ACRO is that you become really confident in managing your wing, as you would expect. So a lot of people do SIV courses, which is to get to the same outcome, which is to be really confident with the wing that you're flying and be comfortable managing any situations. I reckon every pilot should attend an SIV course every year, you know, would be the ideal scenario, really, and kind of really help safety. So that was the same outcome for flying ACRO as well, getting really confident in controlling your wing. But also, because there's so much to ACRO, there's so many different tricks. There are negative tricks like helicopters where parts of your wing are flying backwards. Then there's more dynamic tricks like rhythmic sat, things like that. There's all kinds of different types of tricks. So you've got a huge variety there to kind of learn over many, many years and try and perfect. And the list of tricks that exist out there is huge. So to try and learn them all is going to take years and years and years. And to perfect them all is going to take even longer. So there's kind of like an almost endless learning experience there that will keep me going for years and years. There's also the top pilots out there. They're coming up with new tricks all the time. Each year, there's probably two or three new tricks that appear. Pilots are flying twisted now, so they're flying with twisted risers. So the pilot is actually facing backwards, and they're actually doing the same tricks that they can do flying normally, which is just incredibly difficult and demanding. But that's like another level of flying and extra points in competitions, which is one of the other reasons that they fly in this way.
Jack explains more about fear, guts, and taking the time to progress.
People go, how do you have the guts? How do you deal with your nerves? How do you get yourself into those positions and not be so took over by fear that you can still perform these moves? I always say the scariest bit about paragliding, or the bit that takes the most guts, is the moment that you take your feet off the ground. And what I mean by that is that when you go on your EP, your CP, or even a tandem flight, and you take those first steps off the ground, that is actually what takes the most guts, in my opinion. It's the fear of the unknown, and you are dealing with, at that time, the most risk that you will probably see in your paragliding career, because you are completely new in the sport, and you don't actually have that much knowledge of the very thing that you're going into the air with. So I just all see it as a natural progression. And when you first start paragliding, you don't look at cross-country hounds that, you know, fly 250K, and you don't look at them and go, oh God, that's scary. Or you do, in fact, but you don't expect to be able to do it tomorrow. They seem to miss that with ACRO, and I feel that it's not actually that scary once you take things a little bit further and you do your first stall, which is absolutely terrifying. It's still, for me, one of the scariest moments in my career. But then you do 10, you do 15, 20, and it becomes a little bit, you know, every day. And you just go into develop that, and you take a little bit more time, and you start to learn more maneuvers. And every bit or every particular move that you learn is just as scary as the last one, but it doesn't require any more guts than it did to actually book the course that started your flying career in the first place. I know some cross-country pilots that are flying wings above their level with perhaps one rescue that is of the wrong type. And what I mean by that is people flying, say, a high-end cross-country glider with just a Regalo, and a Regalo doesn't open every time. And if you're going to choose one rescue on its own, I would go for a round. And there's little like bits of information that really change the way people see piece of equipment, the way people see acro. And we're going to go out to bring this positive attitude towards it. And we want to allow people to see that we can train safely. And, you know, acro is as safe as cross country, if not safer. Because if you think about it, cross country all over the world, you are taking off in a site that you know, most likely, maybe your everyday site that you go to every weekend. And then you're leaving and you're going and covering ground that you have absolutely no idea about. It all follows a pattern, of course, of where to find turbulence. But you're entering air that you don't know exactly too much about. Where in acro, every day we come to the same site, we take off at the same site. We're providing levels of safety that are there all the time. And when I train, I will train with a certain amount of height. I will leave, say, 500 meters above ground when I'm training in Rio Ganya, so I have time to deploy my first rescue, check that's okay, deploy my second and third if necessary. And there's loads of steps and precautions that we have that allow us to train, you know, 400-500 hours a year if need be, and be completely safe. And that's what we want to get people to realize, is that acro can be safe. And then when people realize that, I think it will be took on by a wider range of people, not just for pursuing acro on its own, but for enhancing and widening their range of opportunities within cross country.
Which is essentially what SIV did some years ago.
Yes, exactly, definitely.
And this is like we said earlier, that spectrum.
There's some natural development, I think, there. And there's also things like people that are already in the acro scene going for what we call hero tricks, which are tricks that are seen by the professionals, or, you know, perhaps your everyday or weekend pilots that have been in it for years that are now flying things like infinity tumbling or this, that and the other, that really put yourself in an extra element of danger that you don't need to be in that time. For example, when you learn helicopter, the only real risk you have is getting twists. And as long as you've taken account of these precautions, where you've got your height, you've got your reserves, you're most likely going to walk away from that, or you definitely will walk away from that, as I have done in the past. And if we can educate these people to not necessarily go out there and without the right equipment, the right training, and go for infinity tumbling, and we can provide them a progression and a step-by-step process to that, not only will they enjoy it more, they will enjoy the horrible enduring hours of learning helicopter, because it's one of the most difficult maneuvers you can learn. They will enjoy the whole process and they will be much safer throughout that. So we want to just make sure that people hit these tricks, they hit the foundations, as it were, and not just go for the tricks that people look at and go, wow. Because, you know, the pilots amongst the acro community can all look at these tricks, and if you're going for the hero tricks that really do increase your level of danger, you can see it. You can see when a pilot is scared, or you can see when they're not particularly pulling the right corrections or inputting the right amount of brake, and you can see that the wing is actually looking after them. Because in today's industry of acro, we've improved the wing so much in comparison to, say, 10 years ago. You know, I remember hearing a story from a friend of mine, and he nearly fell into his wing going from helicopter to a sat, and that was because the wings were so big and they had so much energy, whereas doing that these days is almost impossible. And they've allowed us to do tricks, you know, without an element of perfection and not following the foundation and still get there. They really look after us these days, but we can't every time go out there expecting the wing to look after us, because at the end of the day, it's going to slap you in the face if you do these kind of things.
So learning and progressing in the UK isn't easy. Here's Lee explaining the issues.
Currency is, as in all aspects of paragliding, acro especially, currency is everything.
Yeah, it doesn't favour British pilots, does it?
Unfortunately not.
We don't have the weather and we don't have the sights.
No, it's very, very difficult. And acro pilots and aspiring acro pilots in the UK, they're spending a lot of money and a lot of time on traveling abroad, traveling to places like Ola Deniz in Turkey or Ganya in the summers. And it's the little bit that I think sometimes the general population in the UK kind of forget. They see the guys whizzing it around the hill. And at the moment, I still feel that we're in a transition period where we're trying to let the UK paragliding community know that actually what we're doing, maybe lower around a hill or in front of UK hills, is something that actually we put a lot of time in and a lot of expense and a lot of effort in training for, to get to that kind of standard. And it takes a massive amount of dedication. You know, you have to be prepared to use all your holiday time to go to these places, to spend a lot of money to get yourself up and down the mountain. With people like Jack and Alex, they've invested hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours in training abroad, in chasing around the UK. And there's a couple of sites in the UK that on a good day you can have a play on. But it's being prepared to travel 4 or 5 hours to get to that site. You know, it has to kind of almost take priority in your life, especially as a UK pilot.
Lee actually teaches acro as well as SIV and is one of the few providers of bespoke courses. So what does an acro course actually entail?
When I started properly flying acro maybe 7 or 8 years ago, there wasn't really anyone there to talk to. I mean, you do SIV courses, you learn the basics, maybe you learn a SAT. And then it was just up to me to go to the places that, you know, a lot of acro pilots go to, or Ganya, for example, or Turkey. And over my time in training, I realized what bits worked for me, what bits didn't, the bits I rushed a little bit too far ahead on too quickly. And so the way I've structured my course is kind of based on my own experiences, how it worked for me, how I've seen, you know, the professional guys train. I've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time with some of the top acro pilots. And I realize they're incredibly well disciplined. You know, everything you see on Red Bull TV or wherever it might be looks fantastic, but there's an amazing amount of time and effort that they've put in, and they're very disciplined about the structure and the way they train. So over all the years that I was learning and training and hanging around with these guys, I was picking up little bits of how to make it work, how to keep it safe, how to have a long career flying acro, and kind of amalgamated it all into the course that we do now. But it's just come from kind of years of hanging around with the guys and listening and sucking up bits of information along the way.
What would be the prerequisites of coming on an acro course with you? Like, what would the pilots already be able to have to do before you would accept them on the course?
To begin with, I mean, doing an SIV, at least one SIV course, is an absolute prerequisite. Being able to hand the glider in all sorts of situations, from deflation type of situations, understanding the full brake range we have, the consequences of using brake range, the right time, the wrong time to use it. Being able to master the simple skills, like controlling a spiral dive. It's very easy to get into a spiral dive, but actually having control throughout the process, especially with the exit, being able to build up energy on a paraglider is very easy, but being able to manage the energy is something that takes a bit of time and a bit of practice. So for anyone that I have that wants to begin acro, we work a lot on energy management, being able to get the glider into a situation, whether it be a spiral dive, whether it be wingovers, for example, which are something that people see and people do a lot around hillsides, but for me are one of the most technical maneuvers in acro flying. So we spend a lot of time learning the management, learning the recovery techniques, learning how to deal with asymmetric deflation situations, full frontal situations, gliders surging, gliders building up energy. And once we've got a really good understanding how to deal with the energy the glider can produce, then we can carry on and start working up the acrolist maneuver from the basic maneuvers and further on.
Yeah, you've actually developed a schedule, haven't you, for what you think is a sensible progression route.
Yeah. What you find is in some of the top level manoeuvres, they all start from the background manoeuvres. So wingovers, spiral dives are the two main ways that you then induce the energy to do some of the more higher, more complicated manoeuvres. So what I've tried to do is formulate a module where we get very good at the introductory manoeuvres, which later on we'll fall back on, that create the energy to make the more sophisticated manoeuvres or the more high energy manoeuvres. So for me, it's really important to absolutely master the basic manoeuvres, be it spiral dive, be it SAT, be it wingovers, be it asymmetric 360s, that kind of thing. And once we've really mastered that, then you have the skills and the glider control to then use those manoeuvres to link them onto some of the bigger manoeuvres or the more high energy manoeuvres.
The top guys make it look so easy. I mean, how many hours of training would an average person need to be able to perform a helico?
It takes a lot. Helico for me is one of the most complicated manoeuvres. Mm. And it's the kind of manoeuvre where a lot, and I know quite a few very well-rounded, talented acro pilots who steer clear of helico because it takes, you know, infinite tumble, stuff like that. Just takes energy. Mm. Energy in the right timing. But helico takes an amazing amount of finesse and control. It's how much dedication you can give to it. So you might have an acro pilot who's got a few hundred hours under his belt, but that might have been over a few years. You know, they might fly in Turkey for a couple of weeks and then they do nothing for a couple of months or more. It's about having the continuity. It's about having the consistency of flying. Even the best acro pilot, if they don't fly for 6 months, their skill level drops. For me, after a good few weeks of constant acro flying, I can feel my level rising. But if I then stop for a couple of months, I really notice how rusty I become. And you lose that little subtle feeling that you need to make these kind of maneuvers work and work regularly. So for me, it's not so much about hours. It depends on the pilot. Some pilots have a great degree of talent and understanding and can pick things up very quickly. For some pilots, it takes a bit longer. So it depends a lot on the individual. And it depends a lot on how much the individual can give to it, how current they can stay with it. Currency is every, as in all aspects of paragliding, acro especially, currency is everything.
Alex, Lee and Jack are all founder members of the British Acrobatic Paragliding Academy, or BAPA for short. They and others founded this to help others progress safely and progressively. Here they are explaining the aims of the organisation, progress to date and what the future holds.
It was formed about 2 years ago because there's no sort of formal group for acro in the UK, and there's no way for pilots who are interested in acro to kind of find the right information, find what equipment they should fly with, where they should fly, how to train, things like that. So the group formed to kind of help and nurture pilots like that. The group's formed of pilots of varying degrees of experience from lots of different backgrounds. I've been flying a long time, but I've not been flying acro for that long, whereas some of the other pilots like Lee Trihorn, he's been flying acro for a lot longer and he's an instructor. I'm not. We've got Jack, who's also been flying for quite a few years, but he's got a lot more hours flying acro. So we've got a good mixture in the team. The team's made up of Jack Pimblett, myself, Danny Taylor, Dave Roberts, Lee Trihorn, John Miller and Tony Pimblett. We also train together a lot, so as a team we'll often go to the same locations to train, the best locations in the world like Organia and Aludeniz. We'll train together, we'll help each other progress and give each other help and advice on certain tricks and maneuvers. And it's kind of like a group self-learning experience where we're trying to take the best from the world of acro and new advances in gliders and equipment and harnesses and things, and try and keep that knowledge with a view to make that accessible and useful for other pilots outside of our group hopefully in the near future.
What are your aims then for the BAPA?
We've got a number of aims. So the first one was to help new pilots who are interested in acro, give them a way to progress, give them the right advice and help and support, which we're working on at the moment. It's not something that we can offer really right now because we've got kind of insurance and paperwork challenges, but it's something that we want to do as soon as we can get things sorted out. We want to promote the discipline of acro within the UK paragliding community. We want to promote paragliding in the general public as well. So something we've got in the pipeline is potentially displaying at events and maybe even air shows across the UK. We want to also represent the UK in the world acrobatic community. So potentially if we keep training hard enough and keep trying new tricks and pushing ourselves as a team, then we should have a good standard so that we can actually compete with the other teams across the world. The likes of the French guys are probably the best team, but then you've got the Spanish guys who have been around for years, like the godfathers of acro.
And some more info from Jack.
So BAPA started because when I started, there was a few pilots before me, but there was no kind of material or no one I could go and knock on their door for a cup of tea and chew their ear off for an hour, you know. There was just absolutely no material for me to go and learn. I did everything from reading a book called Acrobatics. I read all the trick list on justacro.com. I even started watching videos on YouTube. And it wasn't until that after I'd kind of progressed past a certain level and I'd gone out to Tenerife and taught myself helicos off a YouTube video without the right equipment and without the right training mentality. It wasn't until then, and then I went to Orgaña, that I met the right people, that my progression was accelerated because I was in the right environment. Now, if you give people the right environment for the start, I have every faith that people can not only progress faster than I did, but progress at a rate much quicker than mine, at a safer level. And that's what BAPA really encapsulates. And we want to provide a structure or even just a group that people can come to and say, I want to learn acro. Can you give me some tips? And can you tell me, how do I start? What equipment do I need? Where should I start?
Okay, you were saying that the first aim of the organisation is to nurture and support British pilots who would like to get into acro. Can you tell me a bit more about that? How are you going to achieve that?
Like I said before, you can just go online and you can find videos of people doing all kinds of tricks, and there's all kinds of advice flying around on forums and on Facebook and things. But we wanted to create a format or a syllabus or a route from zero to hero, really. So that's all about pilots choosing a safe environment. So locations where if they are going to mess up a trick, for example, and they might need to throw their reserve or cut away using a base system, they're going to land in a safe place. They're going to have support nearby, medical services, things like that. This is all obviously worst case scenario, but you've got to make sure that that environment is set up for safe flying. There's also equipment considerations. So you need to make sure you're on the right glider. If someone who's quite new to it goes out and buys a really small full-on acro glider, they're not going to have a great start to their kind of acro career. So the glider is really important, obviously. The right harness, so your harness is your lifeline. Most acro pilots fly with at least two reserves or two rescue parachutes. They could be round or they could be Regalo, which are kind of steerable reserves. But then in the last few years, the base harness or the cutaway harness has kind of been growing in popularity. Cost-wise, it's a lot more expensive, and it involves a base parachute or like a skydiver's parachute 7-cell canopy, so it involves a different packing technique. But the advantages of it are that if it goes wrong and your wing is not in a fit flying state, you can pull a handle and that wing cuts away, pulling out and deploying a 7-cell canopy, which you can then steer, choose your spot where you want to land, and you can flare, so you're not landing like you would under a conventional reserve, which is obviously just straight down and you could be drifting with the wind and land in any location. We kind of see base harnesses as almost an essential piece of kit now. One problem we see is pilots who set out with a certain trick in mind and they go, right, I want to do trick XYZ. And that's what they focus on, when actually there's probably a whole bunch of other tricks that they should learn and get confident with to build up to that particular trick that they want to learn. So we're really keen to make sure that any pilots coming into the scene build up that foundation rather than jumping in at a high level and hoping to do some more advanced tricks that they shouldn't focus on.
In terms of what BAPA's been up to so far as the academy, what have you been able to achieve?
In order to participate in the Buttermere Bash acro display 2 years ago, we had to achieve a display authorization from the Civil Aviation Authority, and that set up quite an interesting kind of dialogue between ourselves, the BHPA, and also the CAA about how to assess pilots for flying acro displays. And the CAA were really helpful. They were really happy to have a chat. They really wanted to understand paragliding. It's not a discipline or a sport that they're particularly knowledgeable about. So it's kind of a learning experience on both our behalfs. We were learning about how the CAA operate and more about restrictions on displays, things like that, and what they're looking for and safety. And then they were learning about our sport, and they were kind of super interested in what we were getting up to and how we fly and things like that. So that was one thing we achieved. We're also working on documentation so that we can legally perform debags in the UK. A debag is when a paraglider is packed into a bag that's suspended from another aircraft, which could be a tandem paraglider, a paramotor, a microlight, or even a helicopter, and it allows that aircraft to deploy a paraglider pilot out of it. So we're currently working on the paperwork for that, which would then open the doors for all kinds of other things that we've got in the pipeline. We're also looking for sponsorship and assistance. Training itself, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money. We're up every day. I'm flying for maybe 6, 7, 8 hours every single day. It's really, really, really tiring when the weather cooperates, but it's also a drain on resources and income quite significantly. So we've got to pay to get out there. We've got to pay for subsistence. Our equipment obviously gets a lot of use, so we're constantly having to update and repair our equipment.
How do you see the future of BAPA then? What's going to happen next with the organisation?
So firstly, we have to start a British Championships. And that is the kind of main focus of this year, really. So we're going to get a British Championship so that we can find out what kind of the local acro community has and how many people in the UK are interested in acro. And then once we've got that sorted, that allows us to access some funding from the BHPA and kind of go to sponsors and gather a bit more pool of funding. And then going into 2019, we can look at bringing on more team members and setting up courses for our members at the beginning of their career or any time in their career. And they'll come on a week to, say, Iran, where there's a new towing spot out there, and I'll be sat in the boat, or a couple of the fellow lads will be sat in the boat with me, and we'll give them an insight of how I train on a almost professional level, how we go about it, and little bits of information, just, you know, how to do the tricks, how to perform safely, looking after yourself to ensure longevity in your career, and just going out to provide this platform to accelerate other pilots in the UK and really bring acro through.
Many thanks to Alex, Jack and Lee. You can find out more about the BAPA and its work at their Facebook page at www.facebook.com/British Acro. You can also see their website at www.bapa.org.uk or email them at team@bapa.org.uk. For more info on Lee's Acro courses, please visit freeflightacademy.com. If you'd like to listen to other paragliding podcasts, you can do so by going to the podcast page at www.theparaglider.com. As well as PayPal, you can now also donate to The Paraglider via our Patreon page. Using Patreon means you can donate automatically whenever we publish a new podcast. You can choose how much you want to donate per episode and what your monthly limit is, and down the line we'll be able to make exclusive content available to our Patreons. To find our page, just click the link at the top of any page on theparaglider.com. Thank you.